Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Boral Limited Investor Update Call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you'll need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Mike Cain, CEO and Managing Director. Please go ahead.
Good morning, and thank you for joining our call. Today, we've made three major announcements. The first related to our windows business in North America. The second is a market update. And third, my retirement from Boral. If I can take you through the first release, Boral's North American windows business. You may recall that on December 5th, we told the market that we had uncovered financial irregularities in our windows business. At the time, we undertook to update you as soon as we had the findings of the investigation that we commissioned. The forensic investigation by lawyers and accountants has now been substantially completed, and it has been determined that finance personnel within the windows business manipulated accounts and financial statements primarily to artificially inflate the overall profitability and health of the windows business. This misconduct occurred over an approximate 20-month period to the end of October 2019. However, there's no evidence that the manipulations were to hide systemic theft. And importantly, the company can confirm that the financial misreporting is limited to the windows business. Clearly, the board and management are deeply disappointed at the breach of trust that led to the accounts of the windows business being misreported. Our immediate response has been to put in place stronger and more transparent reporting and governance mechanisms in the windows business in line with the systems in place across Boral's other businesses and divisions. We're also strengthening financial and management capability within the business and in areas of oversight, including personnel changes. We apologize for this failure and assure shareholders that such manipulation of figures will never be tolerated within the group. This leads me to the second announcement we are making today. Due to the impact of the correction of Windows earnings and other factors, Boral is issuing an update in relation to the company's results for the 6 months ended 31 December 2019 and its full year 2020 earnings guidance. This update takes into account the financial impact of the accounting irregularities and underlying performance of Boral's windows business in North America on current year results and prior year restated earnings. Boral's net profit after tax, before significant items for the 6 months ended 31 December 2019, is $156 million. Excluding the impact on NPAT of the new IFRS leasing standard, NPAT of $159 million is 18% below the restated first half financial year 2019 NPAT of $192 million. An interim dividend of 9.5 cents per share, 50% franked, will be paid on 15 April 2020, representing a payout ratio of 71%. Overall, Boral's EBITDA for continuing operations for the first half was 6% lower than the prior corresponding half year. This result is broadly in line with the guidance of approximately 5% lower earnings prior to the impact of windows and excluding the impact of the new leasing standard. With the continued market slowdown in housing starts and the 7% lower concrete volumes, revenue from Boral Australia was down 2%, and EBITDA excluding leasing was down 1%. Excluding property earnings of $29 million, EBITDA in Boral Australia was down 12%. Cost savings substantially helped to offset volume pressures and $10 million of higher costs associated with outages at Peppertree Quarry and Berrima Cement. The impact of bushfire-related disruptions and costs was about $1 million in the first half, but a more pronounced impact on earnings is expected in the second half of the year due to the related slowdown in sector activity since January and higher costs associated with the bushfires and adverse weather. Interruptions to infrastructure work have also been exacerbated by the bushfires. Turning now to our expectations for the full year 2020 result. When we take into account the first half results, together with lower than previously expected earnings from the windows business, and a very challenging start to the second half in Australia, including bushfire and weather-related volume and cost impacts, and major project scheduling delay in the second half, Boral expects its financial year 2020 EBITDA to be down relative to 2019, with lower reported EBITDA in all three divisions. Together with higher depreciation costs, this translates to an expected NPAT range of around $320 to $340 million for financial year 2020, which compares with an NPAT of $420 million for financial year 2019 after adjusting for windows misreporting. This is all before the inclusion of expected additional earnings from the announced USG Boral Knauf transaction and before the impact of accounting changes resulting from the adoption of the new leasing standard. We are focused on managing the balance sheet to ensure operational flexibility with capacity to deliver on our strategy. We are committed to retaining our existing investment grade credit ratings. As previously announced, the USG Boral Knauf transaction, if approved by regulators, to proceed on the proposed basis, will require US$335 million of direct funding from Boral. We have a number of options available to fund the transaction with Knauf to maintain a strong balance sheet. The Dividend Reinvestment Plan, DRP, will be reactivated to commence with the current interim dividend, and we will underwrite the DRP in respect of the interim and final dividends for financial year 2020. This will reinforce our balance sheet while we continue to pursue opportunities for further divestment of non-core assets. The announced sale of the Midland Brick business is now expected to complete in the second half of financial year 2020. Given current business performance, we will continue to implement strategies to improve returns and strengthen Boral's business. The third announcement refers to Boral's well-advanced CEO succession plan. I've now been at Boral for about 10 years, including more than 7 years as CEO. As you will recall, the chair noted mid-last year in the annual report that she expected me to remain in the position for another 2 years or so, which I had agreed to. Together with the board, I have decided to bring that retirement date forward. I have informed the board that I will retire once we have wrapped up Boral's full-year results. I am bringing forward this announcement because much as I love the job and much as I enjoy working with a wonderful team at Boral, I think the time is right to retire. I will be 69 in July, and I had always hoped that I would retire before 70. The time is also right for new leadership at Boral. In the meantime, the board will accelerate its CEO succession plans with a global search for a replacement underway. I don't want to turn this into a farewell speech because I'm still around for a bit, but can I just say that it's been an honor to have worked with such a supportive board and three supportive chairmen during my tenure. It's been an honor, too, to have worked with a great management team. And, of course, it's been a true privilege to have led such a committed workforce at Boral. As I said earlier, the outlook for the rest of the year is challenging, and the issues we face with the windows business in North America were extremely disappointing. Our North American division is facing challenges, including lower-than-expected growth, but I remain convinced that the Headwaters acquisition was the right thing to do at the right time. The rationale for acquiring Headwaters was to give Boral scale and access to new growth opportunities in the largest construction market in the world and realize substantial synergies through the combination of two complementary businesses. So far, we are ahead of target in the delivery of synergies, and the growth opportunities that exist in North America are multi-decade opportunities. My primary task during the remainder of my period as CEO will be to ensure that the windows business is back on an even keel and delivering better margins than current. Continue to work to deliver on our business plans. Ensure there is a smooth leadership transition and continue to drive value for our shareholders. Thank you for your time. Our CFO, Roz Ng, and I are now happy to take questions.
We might just delay the questions for a couple of minutes before we just make sure that everyone can lodge their questions and that they're on the line, if that's okay.
Okay.
Thank you. While we wait for questions, you may register by pressing star 1 on your telephone. Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. The first question comes from Simon Packer with Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Hi, so Simon Thackeray from Jefferies. That's one I haven't been called before, so I'll put that one down on the list. Well done. Just a couple of quick questions. First of all, Mike, your retirement at the end of February, what is missing from all these releases, of which there are many, is who leads the organisation from February onwards pending this external search? And the second part of the question is the board fully committed to an external candidate to lead the organisation going forward?
Simon, thanks for your question. Let me correct a misunderstanding. The announcement is very clear that I'll be staying through the delivery of the final year 2020 results. So there's no end of February exit. We're probably talking end of August, early September, when the time we've delivered the 2020 results. So there's no interim change there. So that, I think that was your first question. And then the second one, there's probably no more important decision that a board makes than selecting the CEO. And it's the board's call. And this is the process that the management team has been part of this process and informing the board all along the way and working with the board, including most recently spending time on the phone with the search firm that I've done personally to give them an insight into the role itself at Boral as it stands today. But clearly this is going to be the board's call. Whether they go internally or externally is their decision that they're prepared to make. And right now the process is identifying who the likely candidate is. And the board is, has asked me to stay on and deliver the 2020 results as they go through that process.
Okay, so you're anticipating, if I can just understand this correctly, Mike, you're anticipating that you hope that there'll be an external candidate by late August, early September to replace you at the time of your, that would be the preferred position.
I'm hoping that there'll be a candidate. I won't be making the call as to what type of candidate and who. But
sure, sure.
The way I see it, I sort of fixed a date now, both internally and externally and publicly, and my wife has plans for me after that.
Okay, very good. Can I just quickly turn to Windows? I just want to ask a couple of pointed questions quite deliberately.
Sure.
I'm trying to understand that you've identified there were 20 months of misreporting, effectively of accounting fraud, occurring in the Windows business. David Decker, who came from that business, was president during that time. I'm struggling to understand how a president of a business could not understand that the numbers that were being reported looked at odds with what he was seeing in terms of sales and the market, and therefore why he's still there.
So, interesting, Simon, as we've spent months and involved numerous people doing this forensic investigation, is you really couldn't look to sales as the indicator, because sales were improving during this period. And Decker's strength and background, the facts get kind of lost in this process, but just to set a few points in the grounds and stakes in the ground so people understand. 2 months before we announced the acquisition of Headwaters, Headwaters closed on this Windows business. It was brought in from a privately held company in Dallas. And so they didn't have a lot of time with that business before they turned it over to us. And of course, none of our contemplations in acquiring Headwaters involved the Windows business, but since that was in train when we closed, it was part of the portfolio. Shortly thereafter, and I can't remember the exact sequence, how many more months after the acquisition, the former owner left the business, and we didn't have any Windows expertise inside Boral, and so we promoted Dave Decker to that role. And frankly, as we've gone through this analysis and informed by the investigators, it was very clear that costs had spiraled, but because of the financial manipulation, it wasn't apparent in the financial results. That doesn't mean that it couldn't have been picked up by other means. Hindsight is a perfect rearview mirror to look at things. But it just wasn't picked up. So we've taken steps now with all the changes we've made since we basically flew in Joel's team to take over the Windows business late last year. We've got a new operations head from the Light Building Products Division taking carriage over operations and looking to recruit an operations VP for Windows. We've got, we'll have a new financial team. We put in an acting CFO almost immediately last fall when we initially discovered the situation, and Alan Spears, the acting CFO of this business. We're in terms of the control environment and oversight, we're beginning a search for a new CFO for Boral North America, and we have moved David Decker to customer facing as carriage over sales and marketing and national accounts or large accounts.
So is the summary, Mike, that really the appointment for Dave to president was probably a step too far for his experience and his competency? That's okay. If that's the answer, that's the answer. I really want to then understand in terms of the US, you know, $20 million in synergies, I think we're talking about this year, which is an excellent result. And you're saying you're ahead on the run rate on synergies. And notwithstanding the provisions you've taken and the costs you've incurred with this investigation, the underlying business still looks like it's going backwards. And yet it's cycling really, really easy comps, you know, like you had the wet weather and cold snap and everything else last year. I'm really trying to understand how the underlying business is still underperforming.
Well, you know, it's not a simple and uncomplicated story. So obviously we've got a certain amount of the Windows impact in this year. We've got a decline in site services in the ash business. While the ash sales and volumes are increasing, prices are increasing, site services, as we had signaled, will be lower this year, and that's had an impact on earnings. Stone volumes are off. Canada continues to have a broad impact on both the Stone Division and the Meridian Division because of there's absolutely no recovery in the housing market in Canada. And then there's some additional legal costs in the first half. And we expect to see some additional costs flowing through in the second half as well as the final wrap-up on the first investigation occurs. So it's a plethora of items that do add up and have that impact. And then you look to the housing market, and I think it's in flux right now, but frankly, everyone's still forecasting only a modest gain in this financial year. What we saw in December, which was a big jump, we'll have to see how that plays out in the spring. Sure. If that's the case, that'll change a lot if that's an indicator of what's to come. But if it's not, and you just go to Moody's and others to look for the out, they're looking at 1.3 million housing starts, which is not a great leap forward. So growth is limited by the market. And then we've had a number of issues that I've identified.
Okay. And then, look, I've only got one quick one to slide in just because I don't understand it, and it's genuinely I don't understand it. Can you just explain how and where the bushfires actually affected the first half and the beginning of the second half? I'm not sure I fully understand what the impact is and where the impact was.
Roz, do you want to?
Hi, Simon. It's Roz here.
Hi,
Roz. First half, I mean, obviously we had extreme, you know, extreme heat in New South Wales and then progressed to Victoria. And where it impacted us is really in the regional part of New South Wales and Victoria, obviously, where we have the regional business, where, you know, where the volumes in the regional part of the businesses were significantly impacted by the bushfire.
So from a volume perspective and the operating our plants, we've seen that in December and more so in January. Also, you know, with the fires in some of our quarries, in our large quarry, you know, in New South Wales, Pepper Tree, you know, where we've actually had to divert the water that we use at Pepper Tree for quarrying operations for the firefighting. So as a result of that, you know, we've had to buy water in for the quarry operations, and we've also had to reduce the operating hours at Pepper Tree Quarry as well. So it's had a significant impact.
Simon, as we turn into January and February, you know, it's going to be much more pronounced. January, the bushfires had a much more dramatic impact, followed by the flooding starting in Queensland and now down in New South Wales. So we're looking at that. That's why we want to give the market a heads up that as we turn the corner in the second half, it was quite dire.
And organically, are you feeling that housing slowdown and residential slowdown off as the pipeline runs off before it picks up again? Are you feeling that as well?
In Australia, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for that.
Thank you. The next question comes from Daniel Kang with Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Oh, good morning, everyone. I just wanted to get back on the U.S. Windows business. In terms of a normalized basis, how should we be thinking about this business? Obviously, you've reduced FY19 by about $19 million. On a normalized, sustainable basis in terms of revenue and EBITDA, how are you thinking about this business now?
So hi Daniel, it's Roz here. So as you've picked up through the Windows announcement, we called out the financial impact of that $24.4 million, and as you pointed out, the large part of that misreporting occurred in financial year 2019 of $18.8 million. So we've had to restate the financial year 2019 results, lowering it by the $18.8 million, and you'll see that in the table that we've attached on page 3 of the announcement. So what that means is that in the past, you know, the EBITDA margins for Windows is around 15 to 20% EBITDA margins. And more recently, with the overstatement and the correction, it really is more a low single-digit EBITDA margins business as we see it now. Obviously, Joel, as Mike mentioned, and we've got a new team in place, and their task is to improve the EBITDA margins over time back to an acceptable level. But it is, at the moment, sitting at the low single digits.
Thanks, Roz, for the call. And then just more broadly on the North American business, Mike, you mentioned that the December quarter housing data were very strong and very bullish. When do you expect that to feed through, if these recent strength continues, when do you expect it to feed through into the underlying U.S. business?
So it's an interesting time of year to have that type of anomalous result. So you have a substantial jump in on an annualized basis in the month of December, which is normally a quiet month. And then you go into January and February and March, frankly, which are also quiet months. My reading of the U.S. housing market is until you get to March, April, you do not understand what the second half is going to look like because it's all about the fourth quarter in the U.S. in the second half. And so I don't think at this point we can put a stake in the ground and say with certainty it's going to be one thing or the other. But clearly there's, you know, that was a positive sign in December, but, you know, on a low base, not a lot of housing starts in December to begin with. And so let's see as we get to March, April, how the market is trailing. And if that's a trend, it'll be the first step out in almost 10 years. And in the U.S. housing market that we've been waiting for, and the kind of step out I think in 1 month they went from something close to 1.4 to 1.6 on an annualized basis in December. But, you know, that could be an anomaly as much as anything else. And we'll get to know when we see the spring thaw in the U.S.
Got it, Mike. And just to confirm, the assumption that you've used in your full-year guidance is an assumption of low single-digit growth for the second half? Is that
right? Yes.
Got it. And just going back to Roz, in terms of your balance sheet position, I guess there's some speculation that the North American business may be required to be written down. Can you walk us through how this impacts your balance sheet position and I guess your key banking covenants?
Sure. You know, in particular for Windows, you know, we've obviously with the uncovering of the misreporting, you know, we've gone back to revisit what we think the cash flow generation can be for our Windows business. There's not a lot of tangible and intangible assets held at Windows. So based on, you know, our future cash flows, based on, you know, slightly improving our EBITDA margins, you know, the value in use covers the assets that we have for Windows. On the broader goodwill question, you know, that's really supported by the total North America business. So we feel that we still have sufficient headroom to support that across our broader North America business. In terms of the balance sheet, obviously we announced today that we're reactivating our DRP and underwriting that for the interim and final dividend. You know, as we mentioned, it's really about reinforcing our balance sheet. You know, we have our own targets that we've talked to in the past in terms of our gearing, net debt to net debt and equity of 30% below, and the net debt to EBITDA of 2.5 below. And we're still under that. And we'll talk a little bit about that when we have our results on the 20th. But it's really preparing for, you know, the closure of the USG Boral Canal transaction. So, you know, we want to reinforce it and make sure we have a very prudent balance sheet going forward for that. In terms of the bank covenants, we are well under. Bank covenants is 60%. And so, you know, we're sitting at even in the June financial year 19, we're sitting at about 33% on the gearing there for the bank covenant. So we're well below that.
Thanks very much, all. I'll leave it there.
Thank you. The next question comes from Brooke Campbell-Crawford with JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. Hi, Mike, Roz and Cotty. Thanks for taking my question. First, you just on the local concrete business, volumes are down 7% in the first half, which you've disclosed helpfully. But then for the second half, I'd just be interested to understand what sort of range of volume decline you're expecting.
I don't think we've flagged a specific volume decline in the second half, but I can assure you that some of the major projects that are delayed, Westgate Tunnel is an example of one, and even some of the early bidding work on Snowy Hydro and others will have an impact on concrete volumes in the second half.
Okay. And then for the U.S. business, you flagged that flood services, and you have for some time flagged they'll be down, earnings contribution will be down in FY20. Just wondering if you could quantify that for us. And I guess my starting point would be sort of a 5 to 10 mil EBITDA impact in FY20 versus FY19. Is that a good starting point?
Sorry, just repeat that last bit of the question. Sorry, I couldn't hear you very well. Is that again, Paul?
Yeah, hi Roz. Just looking for some guidance just around the site services earnings decline that you've been flagging for FY20. You know, should we think about, you know, 5 to 10 million of EBITDA being the sort of impact in FY20 versus FY19?
Yeah, so they, you know, as we mentioned, there's three, one substantial large ones. I will give more details of the 4-year impact. but that's really the primary driver of the decline for fly ash, and we'll give a little bit more details about that impact next week at our results announcement.
Okay, and then just last one from me, plasterboard sales in the first half FY20, can you provide any sort of an idea of what the decline was there? Was it sort of 15 to 20%, similar to the building products revenue decline in the first half?
This is the USG Boral Australia joint venture that you're referring to?
Yeah, right. So just the Australian piece of that JV, just trying to understand what the sales were like in the first half versus first half 19. Was it sort of same kind of region of decline as the Aussie building products sales decline?
So what we saw in the joint venture, in terms of Australia, we did see that there was a decline in revenue, you know, for both our plasterboard volumes as well as, you know, some of the manufactured products that go with the plasterboard. You know, we're still seeing relatively good pricing outcomes. So even with a slight decline in the volumes, the margins, the EBIT contribution from our Australia business was just slightly down over the previous comp. So again, we'll give more detail about that, but, you know, we've been able to, you know, maintain the EBIT quite well in Australia.
Okay, excellent. Thanks. And one more if I could actually just, and maybe I have to wait for the results, but do you have a operating cash flow or net debt number for the half?
Yeah, I think we'll probably wait till next week so we've got all the information that we can talk to. But, you know, if you take the June 2019, you know, the metrics that we have and, you know, we haven't, and you can overlay these earnings, we haven't closed on the USG Boral JV, so the debt metrics, you know, isn't really that far away from what we disclosed at June 2019.
That's fine. Thanks very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Peter Wilson with Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Thank you. If I could start by just asking a question on the US business. The stone segment, volumes down 10%. I mean, it's fair to say that's a much, much worse outcome than was suggested back at the September Investor Day. So I'm just, I mean, you called out several factors. I'm just wondering when you became aware of the deterioration in performance of that segment.
So I think it was more pronounced in December than the prior months. There's been a continuing decline associated with Canada, and they have a sizable position in Canada. But, you know, in terms of the timing, you know, it was much more dramatic in December than the prior months.
Okay, given that and given that the first half volumes were reported are down 10%, does that mean the annualized decline is more like, you know, 20, 30, 40%?
Well, you know, I think, you know, as we talked about, even in full year last year, when we looked at the full year results for North America last year, we did talk about some of the pressures that we're seeing in stone. And I think when you guys were over in September last year, we talked a little bit about the category itself. And I think, you know, that we have the category has lost some share against to natural stone, as well as, you know, to the other external cladding. So we saw that impact in, you know, June 2019, and when you look at the results for 2019 for stone, you know, we did report a 2% decline in volume. This is financial 19 over 18. So the first half, we are seeing a steeper decline of 10% on the previous comp. You know, we have seen acceleration of, you know, loss of category share, and, you know, we've had some other, you know, competitor coming back into California, as well as the volume decline that Mike referred to around Canada. So it's really a combination of those three factors, you know, where, you know, the team is very much focused on growing the volume and the revenue lines in the second half. So, you know, at this stage, I think, you know, the guidance that the reports, the numbers that we've seen is minus 10% for the first half.
you said minus 10% for the first half, but I mean, what is the annualized figure? And you just mentioned the team is focused on growing revenue second half. So, I mean, are you expecting revenue growth second half?
We're planning with the spring bounce, and normally, you know, the second half is stronger than the first half. Obviously, we have the previous comp as well to compare to. So we'll provide more update next week, but we envisage that we are planning to improve volumes in the second half.
Okay. And then a couple of, on the Australian business. Firstly, you reported a negative 1% average selling price change for concrete and cement. I mean, it's fair to say, you know, a worse outcome than you were talking to back in August. Could you just explain that price decrease and whether we should expect that to get worse in the second half?
Well, I think to start with, prices and materials are affected by volume declines pretty dramatically and immediately. And so with the decline in volumes that we saw in this first half, it was extraordinarily difficult to be able to get pricing traction. As we've made the turn into the second half, market conditions have not improved. And so we'd suggest that the ability to get pricing traction is going to be limited going forward until we see a break in the market. But right now, as we sit here looking at January moving into February, we don't see any prospect for a significant increase in pricing in materials and certainly in concrete this year.
Okay, that's good. And just one last one. The quarries volume down 6%, aggregates down 13%. Can you just walk me through the difference between those two numbers?
Well, aggregates, as you know, is the high-end, the aggregates that go into concrete and into asphalt. And then quarries is the total volumes that come out of quarries. That includes both aggregates, but as well as the lower fill type items.
So that's okay. Yeah, I mean, if there's a big decline in the high-end aggregates, how then did the segment report revenues down only 1%? Is there some sort of internal, external difference there?
So when you look at, if you look at concrete, that includes our placing business, but, we saw that we have a total revenue decline of 6%, and underpinning that, the volume, we saw 7% decline.
I was talking about the quarries where you've reported a 1% revenue decline. Just wondering, if you're losing so much for your high-end aggregates, how you get to just a small 1% decline?
Well, the quarries here that we talk about on the top is external sales. And the volume is external and internal.
Okay, I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Andrew Scott with Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks. Roz, I just wanted to follow on with your comment to Daniel. Obviously, the financial irregularities were papering over the cracks of what was a pretty precipitous decline in that windows business. Can you talk us through what has actually changed in that business? I presume it's less about the top line. So why have we seen that marked decline in profitability across really what seems to be 19 year, but looks like that is something of a new normal into 20 at least until you put these actions in place?
So the financial manipulation disguised a significant increase in costs. We need to be careful about how much we say here because we have ongoing litigation with the former owner of this business. We had a exit in 1 month of about 80% of the workforce at one plant, the Crestmark plant in Dallas, going to work for the former owner at a new plant that he opened up. And that had a tremendous disruptive impact not just that month, but for several months to come as we responded to that disruption. That started a spiral of costs which weren't being detected in the monthly financial results because of the manipulation that was going on in parallel with this, and therefore the business did not respond. Now, once we discovered and sent in the team late last year, we have been working assiduously on getting the costs turned around in that business. We have a line of sight to improve the EBITDA margins this year and in the medium term to return them to double digits, because we believe the business is capable of doing that based on how it performed prior to the manipulations. And we have a team of finance and operating executives led by Joel Charlton working on that as we speak, and they're pretty confident they can bring it back. And so that's the situation. It was a cost issue that was undiscovered, hidden by the manipulation.
And sounds like probably labor costs?
Labor costs, raw material costs, operating efficiency. You could just go down the line. There was, if you can imagine a situation where a lot of the supervision and the operators all left on the same day, and we had to restaff the plant almost immediately, we were able to get bodies in there, more bodies than we needed, in fact, and the training exercise, and there was just a massive redeployment exercise that we had to go through that drove costs clearly now. In retrospect, as we look at it, it wasn't just labor costs.
Okay, I understand. And can you, Mike, just to be clear, when did that occur?
October.
Yeah, it commenced in September, October 2019 now. Are we up to 2018.
Okay, understood. I think most of my questions have been answered. I just want to be absolutely clear. Roz, no changes for your expectations around full-year property profits?
No, it's still within the guidance that we provided in November, December, around $60 million.
Thank you. That's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Sophie Spartalis with Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Good morning, team. Just a few questions from me on the USG Knauf transaction. Firstly, when is it expected to close? Because I know it's still awaiting regulatory approval.
So, you know, we're waiting regulatory approval, and when that's received, then we'll be in a position to close the business. I think initially we were looking at some expectation at the end of February. I don't think we can pin it down. It could go beyond that, or we could hear something this month. But the timing of that is up to the regulator.
But it's still expected to be within the FY20 year, so before June.
Yes.
Okay.
That's our expectation.
And then just in terms of funding it, you've still got that, the remaining payment. Just, Roz, in terms of the expectation, is that still expected to be funded through debt, or can we expect to see further potential asset sales?
Sophie, so as we called out on page 3, we are reactivating the DRP, so that's going to and underwrite that, so that will give us some more balance sheet strength. In anticipation of the deal closing, and we just a reminder, to close on a deal required US$335 million.
Okay, but given that you've got a declining tough business conditions in both the US and Australia, your net debt to net debt plus equity is sitting at 27%. You mentioned, give or take, it's sort of roughly the same coming into this reporting period. I know you've got sort of your targets are below 30%, but do you really think that it's prudent to be pushing your debt levels higher given the environment that you're in at the moment?
Well, I think that's why, you know, the decision from the board to reactivate the dividend. So even for the interim and the final dividend, we're looking at around $300 million, you know, for that underwrite. And, you know, as we also are still expecting the proceeds to come through from the Midland sale, so that's around 80 million Australian that will come through in the second half of the financial year. And further to that, you know, of course, we'll be looking at our non-core assets and continuing to, you know, pursue with vigour around opportunities for divestment of these assets as well. So it's really a collection of all these three things, you know, the DRP, Midland coming through the second half, as well as, you know, further divestment or the opportunity to look at further divestment of our non-core assets.
Okay, so just to reconfirm, so you expect that DRP to be around the $300 million mark?
Well, if you look at, you know, sort of the dividend that we paid last year, you know, in the financial year 2019, that was around $315 million. I mean, it depends on, obviously, the payout ratio for the final dividend, but, you know, somewhere around that order of 70%, I mean, I guess you guys can do the math, but, you know, a 70% payout of $340 million, you know, it's around that sort of, you know, $240 million that we will raise through the underwrite.
Okay, that's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. The next question is a follow-up from Simon Thackray with Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Just a quick one while we're on disruptions from bushfires and floods and whatever. We haven't talked or anywhere has talked to the coronavirus issue for China plasterboard and sort of broader Asia. Just wanted to make sure we check in on that to see, is there any impact expected in China and or in any of the Asian businesses from the current coronavirus issues, please?
So, Simon, as has been reported globally, the Chinese government has issued instructions to manufacturers and employers in China to extend the Chinese New Year holiday another week to 10 days beyond what it normally would be. The impact has been to shut down our business operations in China, and obviously will have an impact in the second half on the China. We actually saw positive movements in our Chinese business in the last year or so, and certainly in the first half. But we can't expect that to be repeated with the types of dramatic things going on in China today. Its run-on impacts in the rest of Asia are yet to be seen, and we'll have a clearer view on that as we move into the second half. But I think China does tend to have run-on impacts in the ASEAN countries, but the most dramatic impact will be in the third quarter, I think, in our Chinese business.
Okay, but nothing in the outlook commentary so far until that's known what that impact is.
Yeah, we don't have a
oh, that's okay. That's
we,
okay.
We don't have those numbers.
Oh, that's fair enough. Okay, thanks, Mike. Thanks, Ros.
Thank you. The next question comes from Brooke Campbell-Crawford with JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. So just one follow-up from me on the US fly ash business. You talked about 10% sales price increase in the first half, but then also talked about higher costs. So just trying to understand if the 10% was enough to offset higher costs or put another way, you know, were your margins steady or up or down basically in the period? This is just for the sales rather than the site services.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll provide more information next week, you know, when we have all the material in front of us, and it'll be easier to talk through the North America business. Fly ash, stone, I think all the businesses in North America will be better explained when we have all the material in front of us.
That's fine. Understood. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question comes from Sophie Spartalis with Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi there. Sorry, just a quick follow-up on that, the dividend. I just want to ask, how big is the discount on the underwrite, Ros?
It's 1.5%.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Pierce Balder with Infinity Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Thanks, and hi, everyone. Mike, just a quick question just in regards to the new CEO that's coming through the second half of this year. And you made mention that you're working with the hiring firm and put your thoughts forward. I'd just be interested, could you expand on the type of candidate that you've articulated? Obviously, it says the board decision, but just in terms of the skills that you think are going to be required within the business, and you know how that's being reflected in the search criteria.
So I've obviously given my input, and the rest of the board has given their input, but I hate to prejudge what the final outcome is. People come with different backgrounds and experiences to any situation, and the board will be making this call independent, so therefore, I think it would be a mistake if I tried to describe for you this theoretical person. I was joking with somebody; they say, you know, they'd have to have a red S on their chest and a blue cape. The reality is that these are tough jobs and they're quite demanding, and you don't step into these roles lightly, they're. It's been challenging the last 7-plus years. By the time I finish up, I'll be rolling very close to 8 years. And I think that's in dog years. You know, it just tends to be quite strenuous. But that said, it's been probably the most rewarding role in a 46-year career in the industry. And so, therefore, I wouldn't exchange it for anything. I know my wife and family, and I will be quite happy once we deliver the financial year 2020 results to be opening up a new chapter in my life. All that I've done for the last 46 years is work in this industry, and there's probably more to life than that, and I'm going to try to see what that's all about. Thank you.
Quick follow-up, if I may. Just some of the recent organisational changes, were they driven from discussions you had with the board, or were they coming solely from senior exec team and understanding that you need to make some changes, obviously, post some of the issues that have come to light and how the business has been trading?
So all the changes that we've announced here today began as recommendations from the originating business unit through the management team here in Sydney, and we then go on and recommend to the board that these are the steps we're going to take to address these issues. We've had complete cooperation and agreement up and down the line as to what we need to do and how we need to address these things. We've had a full airing of all the issues, and we take these decisions. We don't take them lightly. They're very important decisions, and they have to be done. The test of any organization is ultimately in a difficult situation how people are being treated, and we've endeavored as best we can to be fair and to be clear-headed in what we're doing and understand the basis on which we're making these decisions. So you don't rush into them. You take time. You deliberate. You discuss. You get a variety of opinions, but in the final outcome, it was a decision of the management team in consultation with the board, and you have before you what we've done to address these issues, and we think they're fully adequate decisions.
And just a final one from me. You made mention, obviously, I know you can't talk about it in any detail, but potentially looking at some litigation against, obviously, the prior owner of the Windows business, given what they've done. I'm just wondering whether or not, where's that in stage? Are you sort of in the early stages yet, or do you expect that that has some sort of resolution on that through the course of 2020?
My lawyers will be telling me not to answer that question. We'd rather not at this point make any, once there are conclusions in that work, we'll certainly make it available and make it known as it impacts Boral. We're in the midst of litigation right now, and the advice I have is not to discuss it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to Mr. Kane for closing remarks.
Well, thank you, everybody, for the time and attention to stay on this call and ask your good questions. We will have a much more comprehensive 6-month result that we'll be bringing out on the 20th, and we'll be able to go in more detail in some of these areas that today we touched lightly. But we needed to get out this information because what you have in front of you is the latest information we have, and we're well aware of our obligations to disclose when these key decisions are made. And so we've given you everything that we have at this point. We will have a much more detailed, certainly financial backup coming on the 20th, but, you know, clearly in line with everything we've announced today. So thank you very much for your attention and your questions, and we'll look forward to talking to you again.